Time for the morning brief, where we bring in one of our pundits for their take on the day's big story. Scott Reed is here today, CTV political analyst, former advisor to Prime Minister Paul Martin. Happy Monday, sir.
Happy Monday, John.
I don't know if you're a golf watcher. Did you spend any time with the Masters this weekend?
I did. I was in and out of Ottawa, so I didn't get a chance to watch as much of the tournament this year as I normally do. But, you know, I have to say, I think we're at a really boring point in golf. And I know some people are going, it's always a boring point in golf. But when Scottie Scheffler is the clear platinum brand of the game, then the game is in trouble because the guy is boring. He's boring on the course. He's boring off the course. He looks like your local golf pro. He looks like, you know, the nice white man who lives down the street and is always well-kept and has, you know, pressed trousers. He's boring. And I like a little, you know, I like a little spice in my meal, and there's no spice with Scottie Scheffler.
Interesting observation, because I do find him fairly gormless, and I can watch Tiger Woods lose with more interest than I watch Scottie Scheffler win. But anyway, let's keep going. Carbon tax rebate checks or deposits will start arriving today. This is part of an effort by the federal Liberals to reposition things so that people understand that, okay, fine, axe the tax, you'll also lose these checks.
Yeah, you know, I have a feeling, but we'll have to see. There's, you know, perhaps some portion of the population will say, hey, I got a check from the government. I know they'll have rebranded the notice on your wire transfer or your physical check so that you'll know it's the federal carbon rebate. But I'm still not sure that a ton of people make the connection. And if the math they're asking people to do is to say, I now see that I'm a net beneficiary, they're not going to get it. That's not the way people's minds work. You're not going to persuade people that what they get taken away will be enhanced in terms of what they get back. It's that psychology will not work. Now, maybe you'll chip away at it. Maybe you'll, you know, melt some of the frozen opposition, but I'm not convinced this day is going to be met with angels singing and people applauding. I think in some cases it's going to be held up as, aha, here's the symbol of the policy we dislike. So I think you could literally have the irony of people going, I am so pissed that I'm getting this $450 check. This right here, Martha, is what's wrong with Canada. You may well get that.
Okay. Apparently, young Canadians are turning away from Justin Trudeau and the Liberals, and the reason is housing. They say, I can't afford to buy a house. I'm mad at Justin Trudeau.
I think we're going to put this on the shelf labeled things we already knew. So, you know, the question isn't whether this is happening, and the question isn't whether housing is a big contributor to it, because kids, you know, the age of my two oldest sons, just literally think, well, I can be making, like, my son is making very decent money for a 25-year-old, and it's the same old story. Even at that, that does not permit him the ability to save enough money that he could even reasonably expect to own a home unless the old boy dies. I am the home ownership plan. And so, you know, the challenge, though, given that we know all this, is what do you do about it? And I personally am skeptical that the Liberals should be targeting those younger voters. I am very skeptical that that is a hill they can climb. I don't think that's the quickest group of voters that are going to potentially return to the Liberals, and they need people to return to them because some of the vote that they had is no longer there. I would be targeting older women, women who are over 55. I would be targeting them in the Atlantic and suburban parts of the country, like 905. I'd be targeting them heavily by trying to contrast with Pierre Poilievre, who those voters would have lots of reasons to be anxious about. I think the likelihood is that most of those younger voters will not flock to Pierre Poilievre. They may park there when asked in a survey, but chances are they're just not going to vote. They'll go back to not voting. And I just don't know that the efficiency of going after them makes sense. The Liberals will tell you, just to bore you for 1 second further, that by targeting the younger voters, they get their mums and grandmums because they're occupied with the problems of their kids and grandkids. I don't really think that's the way logic works. And so we'll see. But I think the energy that the Liberals are currently expending on the younger voters could be wasted energy. I'm not sure it's the most efficient focus that they should be making right now.
Do you have any sympathy for a group of new homeowners in Oakville who are very upset that there is construction of houses right next to them? I mean, I look at this and I think, what did you think was happening? You moved into a housing development.
I have no sympathy whatsoever. In fact, you know, how much energy, how much time, how many syllables do we spill all over the microphone on this radio station talking about the lack of housing and what we need to do? And then we're all full of cynicism when we do hear announcements like we did on Friday. We go, yeah, but it's going to take forever. Well, right there is part of the problem. And when you do build, people are like, oh my God, did you know that swinging hammers and pounding nails makes noise? That tractors and bulldozers create sound? Oh my God, what are we going to do? So it's fine. Get some homes built, just not where people live and not where people want homes. That's fine. That's when we do it. This is the problem. This guy said he was offered $10,000. Like, the developer actually offered him $10,000 as an acknowledgement that it was an inconvenience. And the guy goes, no, I'm not going to take it. Like, come on. If you can afford to turn down $10,000, then I can afford to say your life is actually not riddled with problems.
Yeah, I have to say, I look at this and I just think, okay, you just bought a home in a housing development. You have to assume that next door to you, they're going to continue to build homes. And so I'm not sure what the story is here. Opioids now responsible for one in every four young deaths. It's worth noting one of the reasons for that is because young people don't tend to die from things like stroke and heart attack, but it used to be suicide and car accidents.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is, you know, very alarming. I want to look at the study, you know, in terms of the headline of, oh my God, like, you know what? 25% of kids who are dying are coming from opioids. Let's make 100% certain we've got those numbers right. But we know that it's at least directionally correct. We know that this is a crisis. I come from Belleville. I was in Belleville the day that the opioid, you know, burst, that challenge burst from 13 people, and then a couple of others the day after all went down with opioid effectively poisoning from fentanyl. It looked like it was laced. And, you know, that made national news for 2 days, and then it didn't. But guess what? You know, and down street, downtown in Belleville is still struggling with this challenge, and it's going to continue to struggle with this challenge. And rural and semi-rural areas all across the province are struggling with it, and downtown cores. And it is younger people, not exclusively, but it's younger people. And the challenge is that confronting it requires, you know, supportive policies, as they call them, quote unquote, supportive policies, which means you have to surround people with housing solutions. You have to surround people with addiction solutions. You have to surround people with jobs. And all of those policies have to knit together, isolate it on an individual in order to lift them up and give them life chances and opportunities that allow them to escape the reaches of all these things. And that is extraordinarily intensive and expensive. So I don't know what the answers are, but boy, the problem is sure staring us in the face.
Okay, one last item. The leader of the Parti Québécois is pledging a third referendum. And, you know, one of the things I have found fascinating, Scott, since moving out of Quebec is how much I really don't care what happens there.
Yeah, and I think that apathy is probably widely shared. I also think it's a little dangerous. You know, I was around, you know, I was really active during the 95 referendum. It was a scary time, very, very scary time. I will never forget when, you know, Mr. Chrétien went into caucus the day after, thought he'd almost lost the country, broke down in tears addressing his caucus. It was, you know, Canada as we know it without Quebec would not be Canada as we know it. So I don't think we should be glib about it. And I don't think we should be glib about the Parti Québécois making this pledge. Yes, this guy's looking for percentage. He's trying to resurrect his party and get some mojo going. But, you know, to our listeners, they may not be familiar with these guys, but the CAQ that sort of ate the lunch by being nationalist but not separatist, ate the lunch of the Parti Québécois. They're on the decline. Conditions are changing in Quebec. We could see this debate come roaring back. We really could.
Thank you, sir. Good to have you this morning.
See you later.
Scott Reed is CTV political analyst, former advisor to Prime Minister Paul Martin, and our pundit this morning on The Morning Brief. We'll talk more politics in the next half hour. Vashi Kapelos is going to be here because it's budget day tomorrow. Fraptious Clay, Kalu Clay. Fraptious joy, actually, is the expression. And Thomas Mulcair is going to be here as well for a Mulcair Monday.